Hey everybody, Stu Smith here going live. I hope you are well this beautiful summer Monday morning. It is here in the mid-Atlantic anyway. If you are burning hot, I hope you guys can stay cool. So, here's a topic that I've been probably one of the main reasons why I got into fitness coaching in the first place. Really, truly was. I saw a need back in the 90s where people were coming to join the military, law enforcement, firefighters, and just unable to pass an entrance level fitness test. And these aren't like job specific. Now, the fire department, that's a different story because they have that CPAT, which is one of the coolest tests, I think, for someone to see if they want to be a firefighter, because it's going to be very job related with all the gear that they wear and all the activities they do. A little bit different from your standard push-up, sit-up, mile and a half run test that most people cannot pass. And that was back in the 90s, because I saw it coming into the Naval Academy. People weren't able to, within the end of the plebe summer, that boot camp, over before it started, over half would not pass the physical standards. But by the time they finished plebe summer and got into a little bit better shape, they actually whittled that down to a probably about 8%, maybe 6% that were still failing. But you look at the numbers of a class, that's still 100 people you got to deal with to get them in better shape. And you're just hoping that they get to that minimum standard. And that is no way to go when you're doing the thinking about the tactical professions, right? Those minimum standards are there, you know, just to say, yes, you have what it takes to get into the training. And with a little bit of luck, you're not going to get injured, and we can progress you up from there to get you to where you really need to be to do your job. So in the 90s, I saw this, and I was like, you know what? I see a need here in the tactical professions. And I was really focused on that bottom percentage. But something I learned real quickly, and this is a shame, is something I learned real quickly when I was writing and creating programming, is unfit people do not buy fitness books. Just the way it is, right? Most of my best-selling books and most read articles are spec ops level fitness training, very advanced, pretty hardcore, athletic-based, high goals, you know, like these right here, the Navy PST ones. Yes, there may be an intermediate level, you know, and there are a few beginners that will do this journey. But I've had people who are 80 pounds overweight, and they transform themselves, and now they're serving, you know, 100 pounds less, and just crushing it. So there are stories of people able to do that, but I will say those stories are not as many as I get as people going from 10 pull-ups to 20 pull-ups, right? I like to do that. I like to train people and going from a 7-minute mile to a 6-minute mile, but there's nothing more rewarding as a coach and as a human just to see somebody completely change their lives with healthy lifestyle changes and go from a deconditioned, unable to think about passing a fitness test to crushing a fitness test and losing 80 to 100 pounds in a year. And I've done it numerous times, and it is something that probably fuels me more than just about anything that I do. But unfortunately, unfit people don't buy fitness books. So I may write and talk about a lot of spec ops stuff, but the need for special ops training is not as well. The need for special ops preparation is just as great as the need for people who are on the other end of that spectrum who are just trying to get healthy, right? There's a, you know, there's an 80% attrition rate because people are failing spec ops training because they're not prepared. They're in pretty good shape, but they're not mentally and physically prepared to do that. That's another level of the spectrum and journey that I do like to discuss, and I often do. But there's a beginning part of that journey where we're all beginners. We all start off at zero. We all start off failing fitness tests, and eventually you get to pass them. But there was a study that was done just July 19th of 2023. That's how quickly this thing has turned around. And it's called The Effects of Resistance Training on Academic Outcomes in School-Aged Youth, a Systematic Review and Meta-Analysis. So a meta-analysis is basically what they do is they take like a number of studies that have already taken place, and then they combine them together and real look at the statistics of all of these different studies and outcomes, and then agree to disagree or agree with the process and everything. You get a little more information out of it. And this meta-analysis was, I think, 53 different studies. I put a link in the description so you can read the whole thing if you're into that. What I'll do here, though, is just kind of make a quick little conclusion for you. But here's the best part of it. All right. So I had PE classes growing up through school, all the way from kindergarten, or I guess recess, you might have called it back then. But, you know, starting like in middle school, even elementary school, we had PE classes. Middle school, we had PE classes. High school, we had physical education classes that were also weight training or sports or something like that. And it was an hour every day. There wasn't a day we didn't have physical education in the program. Today, I know we have a teacher on here that's listening. But there's, it's everything. Yes, we need to have smarter people in math and sciences. But if you read this study, you will see that classroom behavior is better when there's physical activity. The ability to learn new concepts is improved with some physical activity. What was the other one? Let's see. Well, not only do you get in better shape, body fat, height, weight standards, physical fitness, all of those things, but cognition, which is your ability to learn new tasks, enhances classroom behavior and academic performance, you know, positively affects learning new concepts. That is what this study has shown. Now, there's all kinds of excuses why we don't do it anymore, because there's not enough time in the day, or where there's an extra math class we got to take. So, you know, it's just, I get it. I get it. But, you know, we spend a lot of money in this country on really dumb stuff that we probably don't need. This is one of those things that we need to make kids better academically, but also just physically able to do things and be an asset and have options when they finish. Like, there's the biggest reason why people do not or cannot join the military right now is because of their lack of physical fitness, and they don't meet the height weight standards and body fat percentage standards. So they have to have like a pre-boot camp program in order to get people within those standards a little better. And it's alarming. It's an alarming number. In fact, the recommended amount is 60 minutes a day, and that's for adults and children to be physically active. And if you're not, it's a long list of negative things that occur from that. So, like, I don't want to preach to the choir, because I know people who are coming to listen to me are, you know, already exercising and want to exercise and enjoy exercising. Maybe not everybody enjoys it as much as I do. I get that. But just doing something is going to be very helpful. So anyway, I have an opinion. I've had an opinion of this for over 25, 30 years. But it is always good to see some science actually backing those opinions up to a point where hopefully maybe some administrators or Department of Education, you know, whatever, actually starts making time in the day to do some physical activity. And maybe it's a regional thing, maybe it needs to be a national program, but something needs to be done. And physical fitness can't be left alone just for the athletes, right? You don't have to be an athlete to be in great physical shape and conditioning. You know, you do not have to be. And I think that is what is happening right now. The only people who are working out are those who are competing in some sport or racing or things like that. People just don't do it. Young kids just don't do it to stay busy. There's too many distractions, you know. And put it this way, you know, I know I'm the grumpy old man talking fitness of the younger generation, and they're weaker than I was. I mean, I get that. That has happened throughout centuries of time. I'm not saying that, because when I was coming up, right, and I was going through SEAL training, I remember those Vietnam era SEALs who were BUDS instructors calling us the MTV generation, right? Now, if you're old enough to realize what that is, MTV used to be a really cool channel where there's just music videos on all day. I don't know what's on there now, a bunch of reality TV, but it used to be really cool, and music videos were a new thing. So, yeah, that's what they called us. We were still fine. So I get it. Every older generation is pissed off at the younger generation, and that's not what this is. I wanted to come in here, mention this, and back it up with some science. I have young people every day that I train that give me hope for the future every single day. So I just wanted to follow this up by me saying, it's not just the grumpy old man, say, get off my lawn, younger generation. It's actually some science backed up in there, and I see young people every day wanting to serve. But let's just look at it on a statistical issue. When half of your younger generation cannot meet the height, weight, body fat standards and physical standards of its military, there is cause for alarm to a point where we may not have people that are capable of serving if we don't do something, or we're going to have to take drastic steps and do things like have like a 6-month boot camp before boot camp. You know, I don't know. All right. So let me get off my stump here and take some questions. Audie, thanks. Marine, thank you, sir. I appreciate what you do, what you did. Looking to go firefighter, what should I be focusing on? Well, you're going to be taking the standard fitness test, like a push-up, sit-up, pull-up, push-up test probably at some point in your journey, but you're also going to take that CPAT. And that CPAT, Candidate Physical Assessment Test, I think that's what it stands for. But anyway, you can't miss it. CPAT. I actually have a program for that that simulates all of those events. And it's a lot of fun. I've had a lot of firefighters swear by it. So if you go to StuSmithFitness.com and check out this page, you can see it right here, police and firefighter. This right here, Ace the CPAT firefighter workout. This is the ebook. You can also get it in book version if you want. But this is what I would do if I was going to be a firefighter. It works. I can't tell you how many firefighters have done this already. Works really well. No pay all the way. I'm not sure what that means, Robert. Let's see. Would you say that people who lose that much weight to get in shape tend to make it to and through selection more than people who are already in shape? You know, that's a great question that I don't have an answer for. Because I'll be honest with you, it just hasn't happened enough to be a statistic, right? In my head. Maybe it has happened that I don't know. But yes, the mental toughness it takes to lose that much weight is unquestioned. Absolutely. I mean, you have a level of, your journey has taken you through a level of discipline and mental toughness and being uncomfortable that most people may not have had to do. So yes, I would agree with you on that. And anecdotally, I would probably agree with you that if you've had to lose that much weight, getting to and through selection is probably a higher percentage, but I don't have those statistics to actually say, yes, it is 50% more, you know, greater, you know, your chances of if you've lost 100 pounds before, because I don't know if that statistic even exists, but it'd be interesting to find out that. Yeah, that's a fun one. I'd like to look into that one. Let's see. What other research did I find in this process? Let's see, got another question here. What methods do you like using to lower your heart rate during water confidence training? I mean, the only thing I can know of is working less and breathing better, right? Maybe some. Unfortunately, it's hard to breathe in your nose when you're in the water, so you might have to be a mouth breather at some point, especially if you're wearing a mask or you got water up your nose. You know, there's all kinds of stuff that can prevent you from breathing. But if you can keep your head above the water and say you're treading, I definitely recommend, you know, nose breathing, as long as you're, you know, you don't have a mask on your face and charged. But if you're just, you know, nothing, no eye protection, anything like that, definitely be a nose breather. And work to be more efficient. That's the key, is the more you get to building a stronger kick so you can get 100% out of every kick versus 35 or 40% out of every kick. And the reason why people do that is lack of mobility. I've seen it all the time when people are trying to, you know, kick water down. Their hips, knees, and ankles are so tight, they actually can't do it. And they can't do the egg beater, which is probably the most efficient version of swimming. In fact, let me put this article in there for you, because this will make a huge difference in your treading, water confidence, all of that in there. Check out this article, because it is a mobility issue for most people. And then once you do that, you can practice. But read that article. Has some good tips in there on treading water. For many people, that's the hardest. But yeah, sure, there's underwater stuff and drown proofing and things like that. And the key to that, keeping your heart rate down, is literally relaxing. And I know that's easier said than done. But the more you practice, it's going to get a lot easier. I have guys that are near panicking the first time we even simulate hands tied behind their back and our feet together. You know, I can see it in their eyes when they come up to breathe. You're right. They're just barely, you know, they're gasping for breath and trying to get back down, you know, using their hands because, you know, they can't do it without their hands. But then the second, the third, the fourth, next thing you know, they're actually relaxed and able to just do that all day. So take some time. Takes practice. So what we do is we work on all those pool skills on mobility day. So when we do mobility day, which is really 5 minutes of non-impact cardio, 5 minutes of stretching, foam rolling, then we go swim. We do all the drown-proofing drills. We do treading drills. We do underwater swims, life-saving, all of those things. And it's really helpful after mobility day. Everybody sees a huge difference in their ability to tread. Like most of my guys are all treading 10 minutes, no hands, you know, within a month. Let's see. Have you ever heard of Deep End Fitness? Yes, absolutely. And the UTL. If so, do you think they are good prep for SOCOM? Yeah, I think all those are great, especially if your weakness is in the water. But if you're a swimmer and you're really comfortable in the water and you're crushing it, you know, that's something you don't need to focus on. So my answer is it depends. If you need to work on your water skills, getting in the water as many times as you can, absolutely. Get some special coaching, absolutely. But if you're solid in the water, you probably need to focus more on land, run, lift. You know, get a little more durable with rucking. So you just got to be good at everything. And fortunately, what a lot of people do, they tend to double down on the shrinks and they ignore weakness. Next thing you know, that weakness is exposed right when they need it the most. So it's a tale as old as time. Seeing it year after year. What program for a current law enforcement officer? A lady I work with does CALS on the long work week and weightlifting on the short week. 12-hour shifts is new to me. You know what? I like that idea. You know, nothing wrong with that. CALS and cardio to keep your endurance and muscle stamina up. You know, work on that work capacity. And then lifting is typically shorter. Doesn't waste as much time as, well, I shouldn't say waste, doesn't take as much time as, you know, your miles of running and cardio stuff. So I like that idea. That makes a lot of sense to me. Something we do in these, I don't have our seasonal tactical fitness periodization. In fact, I'll put a link to it right here. You can go through these programs and check them out. Link in the comment section. Seasonal tactical fitness periodization. There's a link in there, a video in there that explains what I'm talking about in greater depth. But what we do is it's kind of a block periodization model. And that's really what she's doing is you do like whatever you're trying to focus on, you do 3 weeks of it. So 3 weeks of lifting, right? And a little bit of maintain your cardio a little bit. And then you take a week off of lifting, but you do all your calisthenics and cardio during that fourth week. That's just my system, 3-1. Now you could do this 2-2, 1-3, you know, whatever you feel like, you know, you want to do in those shifts. But yeah, 12-hour shifts are kind of tough. My advice on the 12-hour shifts is get your workout done before the 12-hour shift starts. Because when you work 12 hours, chances of you feeling like working out after that 12-hour shift go down significantly. So an hour to 45 minutes, even 30 to 45 minutes before that shift, get your workout done, especially if it's a night shift. Because that will help keep you awake without caffeine a lot longer than you skipping that workout and then saying, yeah, I'm going to, after this 12-hour shift, I'm going to go work out at 7 a.m. after staying up all night, and you see how well that will go. It sucks. Then you got to try to go to bed after working out, and that usually sucks. So my advice, get your workout done before the shift. Eat something after the shift, go to sleep, catch up on your sleep, and get into that kind of cycle versus saying you're going to work out after the shift, because it seldom works. Let's see. I heard that if you get hurt at Buds, there's a possibility that you get rolled if you're a good guy. What makes someone a good person at Buds? Really has nothing to be with you a good person. A little bit it does, but it's mostly just you have some equity in the program where you haven't failed a run, you haven't failed a test, you haven't done something stupid and got in trouble for it. You know, you're just meeting all the standards and doing well in them. You know, maybe you're top of the class in running and you're top 10% in swimming. You know, you got one of the fastest O course times. If you do that, and let's say you get injured halfway through, they'll say, yeah, this is a no-brainer. Just get well, and we'll get you back in the next class, catches up to you. That's usually how it goes. I mean, people get hurt all the time at Buds. I got hurt in third phase. I was like 6 weeks from graduation. And, I will say that hurt more emotionally than it did physically for me. I mean, my knee hurt pretty bad. I had a clutch in my truck. I couldn't change gears in my truck. I couldn't push a clutch down. My knee was that bad. So I definitely couldn't run, couldn't ruck, couldn't swim. I was down hard for about a month and a half, but they rolled me. I came back stronger, finished up. You know, stories like that happen all the time, but I have seen people get dropped because they got injured at a certain point, because they didn't meet the standard at a couple of things. Like they failed a couple of runs, but they eventually passed them. Because you have to pass them. So you'll get another chance to pass them. Or, you know, they failed drown proofing, you know, three times, but got it on the fourth, right? You know, things like that. So if you're just like kind of floating around the bottom 50% of the class, you know, your ability to stay in the class or stay in the program is decreased significantly. So that's what makes you a good person, if you want to call it that. But it has really nothing to do with whether or not they like you or not. They will like you because you're a good student, not because you have you're funny or you're pretty or whatever. How do you approach training the skinny guy with bad cardio? Well, it would just take more time. You know, I'll get you on an eating program to where you're adding more calories to your day, probably lifting, mixing in some calisthenics in there to work on some muscle stamina, and also add cardio. But anytime you're working out, you're consuming, or I should say you're expelling the calories that you've consumed. So you need to make sure you're replacing all those calories. I mean, I've seen guys gain weight on a marathon running program, right? Because they were eating so much food that they were bringing in more than they were burning. So it really comes down to you eating and having more calories at the end of the day than you are burning in order to put on some mass, right? But you got to be lifting, got to be doing calisthenics primarily with backup cardio on the back end of those workouts. But you got to get good at everything. You can't just go lift for a cycle and not do anything. That's just going to keep your cardio bad. So you got to do a little bit of everything. But it also depends on your goal, right? If you're not trying out for spec ops programs or tactical fitness world, you know, I'd probably just have you in the weight room lifting, right? And maybe finishing up with 10 minutes of cardio at the end of the day, just to get a little bit better at cardio. So once again, it depends on your goals and what you're trying to do as to how I would deal with that person. When you're 800 meter repeats, would you rather see someone keep consistent pace or really push and get that heart rate as high as possible, even if pace slows down further into the 800? You know, that's a great question because we do it both ways. We do a goal pace set. So let's say you're trying to run a 6 minute mile. That means your 800 is going to be 3 minutes. So we try to get every set at 3 minutes, not 250, not 305, 3 minutes, right? Because the goal is let's try to hit this pace over and over and over again. Now, between those 800s, you can rest a little bit, get your heart rate back down, go again. We typically walk about 200 meters before we do our next 100, and then our next 800, when we're working on goal pace. However, many of us, as we get better at these 800s, find that 200 is way too much. I'm already recovered at 100 yards, so let's just go. Right at 100. So you're going to find as you're getting better at these 800s, three minutes is easier to maintain and your rest can be shorter. So my advice, if you're going easy, if you're doing a 3 minute 800 easy, right? But you can't run a 9 minute mile and a half yet. My advice, keep hitting those 300 or 3 minute 800s, but decrease that rest to maybe 50 meter walk, you know, 15, 20 second rest versus a minute, minute and a half rest. That's where you'll see it. But, you know, on some days we sprint up this hill that's, you know, 400 meters up, 400 meters down, you know, so it's a little bit different than an 800, but, you know, we'll also do fast 800 days. We'll do fast 400 days just to work on leg speed. And get those things, get the heart rate up really high. Yeah, I promise you, you mix in some long hills, whew, that'll get the heart rate up. And then it makes it easier to maintain that 3 minute pace if you're trying to do a 6 minute mile. For the PST, does your chest need to hit the ground on every push up? If not, how low do you go? It's a 90 degree bend with your elbow. So, once again, it kind of depends on your arm length and your chest size as to how close your chest is getting to the ground, but it is a 90 degree bend of the elbow, like not up here, not out there, but 90 degrees. That elbow makes a 90 degree angle. I can't even do it now. What the heck? It's like doing something in a mirror. So you get what I mean. 90 degree angle. How good would you say Bud's prep is in terms of getting you back in shape after basic? After boot camp, maybe even in better shape. Well, here's the problem with Bud's prep. It is great. Bud's prep overall is a great concept. It is needed. You need at least 6 to 8 weeks after you go through boot camp to kind of get back in better shape, and that's what it does. However, for some people who have spent all of their delayed entry program time failing PSTs, and then finally the last week of their delayed entry program before they ship, or maybe let's say last month before they ship, they pass a PST finally. They get a contract, and now they go to boot camp. And they're just, by the skin of their teeth, they are in the program. Then they go to boot camp, you know, try to work out a little bit on your own. You're going to get deconditioned. So now that person goes, deconditions for 10 weeks, and goes to prep. Well, you're going to take a PST at prep. You fail that PST, you're out of the program. Now, they may give you a little time before you do that, but for the most part, if you're not passing the PST at prep, you're done. And your spec ops dreams are over before they even begin. So it has nothing really to do with prep, but it has a lot to do with how you prepared prior to going to boot camp. And that's why I say don't even talk to a recruiter until you're crushing that PST. So now you can crush that PST on day one of your fitness test and start focusing on, you know, getting through the training, you know, 4 mile runs, 2 mile swims with fins. You know, you can focus on those kind of things during your delayed entry program process and maintaining your PST. And that makes prep much more useful for that candidate. Unfortunately, a majority of the people who go to boot camp and get contracts are not that candidate. And I won't lie, that is largely why we have an 80% attrition rate at SEAL training. Yes, the training is hard, but it's not impossible. And if you're a little bit more prepared in your time before you join, it's going to be a lot easier program for you. It's not going to be hard. It's not going to be easy. It's just going to be easier. And you can actually pass the physical standards. And then after that, you pass all the physical standards. There's still a wall that you got to get over. And that's that mental toughness wall, because you're going to be cold. It's going to, or you're going to be in dark water, wet, sandy, uncomfortable all the time. You're going to be in a perfectly clean uniform for room inspection. And they walk in the room, they trash the room, and they make you go get wet and sandy in your nice uniform. And now you got to walk around the rest of the day in a wet and sandy uniform. And you failed, right? So, I mean, being able to handle that kind of failure and handle that kind of discomfort is a different level of preparation. There's almost nothing that really prepares you for that other than just you getting wet and sandy on your own and going to work out. You know, not a bad idea, to be honest with you, just because it sucks. And if you're not used to sand and everywhere, you're not going to like it very much. So, sorry, I went off on that question, but it's a good question. I love prep. I think it's been needed for decades. It's a great tool. But the people it is designed for aren't necessarily the best students for it. Does that make sense? So that's my two cents on prep. I think the guys that are trainers there are smart and they're doing the right things with the way they train and prepare you. It's just unfortunate that a lot of people go there unprepared, mentally and physically. All right. Morning, sir. How do you personally plan long-term periods of recovery after training cycles when preparing for the military? How do you recover while you are in the teams? I don't understand what you mean by long-term. What do you mean long-term periods of recovery after a training cycle? I mean, I don't know if you need long-term periods of recovery after a training cycle. You know, I mean, maybe a week deload. Is that what you're talking about? The next question is overall work capacity. Is overall work capacity the most important thing for buds and spec ops? Or is it good performance numbers during evolutions and more valuable? No. Work capacity is very important. It's not the most important thing. It depends, though. Work capacity is very important if you're a strong guy and you don't have a lot of endurance, because the way I define it is, let me show you guys something. Maybe I have it. All right. So let me do this. All right. I got to share a screen with you because this is very important graph. This is a Venn diagram I made up showing you what's really important with your training and how it works, All right. So you guys see this, right? So this is the tactical athlete, active duty operator. And here it says longevity, but you could replace that word with spec ops selection success. All right. Because it's all the same. Now, work capacity. Work capacity is a function of anaerobic, aerobic conditioning and muscle stamina, right? Your ability to just keep on moving and get stuff done, right? Now, durability is its twin sister, and that is a function of strength, power, speed, and agility, right? All of those come into play to make you more durable, and you need both. Both are absolutely critical. Now, recovery is all right here. It's basically stress mitigation, right? Because when you are physically tired, you're physically stressed. When you're emotionally tired, emotionally stressed, mentally stressed, all of that comes down to stress mitigation, which is a function of recovery, nutrition, mobility, flexibility, sleep. You know, all of those come into play when you need to recover. So, you know, when we recover, we're just doing a little bit less stress physically, but we're increasing our sleep time and ability and quality, and we're increasing our nutrition quality. So you're getting the right foods and everything that's going to help you recover, the right proteins, amino acids that actually do repair the muscles, and antioxidants and carbs and electrolytes and, you know, all of those things that prepare you for the next day of physical activity. That's really what we're trying to do when we recover. So I'm not really sure I understand your question. Maybe give me a little bit different answer, or maybe give me a different form, but that's how we recovered in the teams. We just ate better, slept better, and did a little bit less. There were cycles now that were, you know, all night shift stuff. And that was when your recovery was in a little bit of jeopardy, but we worked really hard during the day to make those things work. You know, we got our workouts done before our night shift started. We ate real well, even during the night shift. And we ate well when we were done and we went to sleep. We blacked out our room so we could sleep during the day. You know, that's how you did it when you were working a lot of nights. So, good questions. There's a lot to unwrap in that I can't really do in a 2 or 3 minute answer. Maybe that Venn diagram helped a little more, but that's a good one. I've written a lot of articles on all of that. In fact, since it was kind of recovery based, let's do this. There's an article I wrote here that is about the mastery of recovery is longevity. And then there's, I have a recovery, what I call my one-stop shop page. Stu Smith, check this out. Oh man, where the hell it go? Recovery one-stop shop. Recovery, can't remember what it's called. Landing page, maybe. Here's something else on recovery. Here's four types of recovery days as well. For some reason, my Google machine is not working well. Recovery, Stu Smith, one stop, age. Can't believe that's happening. Usually pops up, no problem. Not sure what's going on there. Anyway, I got a whole bunch of them. All it is a landing page of all the articles and podcasts that I've written about recovery. In fact, let me try that. Recovery articles, podcasts, Stu Smith. see what that says. Yeah, so there's a lot of... you might like this one, too. This is a similar question. How to recover from intensive military training, like post-selection, you know, working night shifts, all that stuff. So there's a whole lot on recovery. And seriously, ask your question, recovery, Stu Smith in there, and you might find a couple of different podcasts or articles on that topic. Okay, Sebastian, let's go down here. Assuming you're a decent runner and decent at calisthenics, how long does it take to become a good swimmer if you haven't really done it before? You know, it doesn't take that long. You know, you have a little bit of conditioning in you. You will learn, though, that swimming shape is not the same as running shape. So you might be a great runner, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to transition into you being able to swim at that same heart rate. You're moving a lot harder. At first, you're not going to be that efficient, but as you start learning some efficiency and technique in your swimming, it's going to be as easy as walking and jogging for you as you get better. So I would focus on technique first and then swimming conditioning. That's usually what I try to do. In fact, I have a system that I use where I teach the combat swimmer stroke, and I'll get people to swim a 50-second 50 yards efficiently. They're not sprinting. They're not doing like 15 strokes per length. They're down to like 5 or 6 strokes per 25 yards, and they do that in 50 seconds. Once I get that technique down to a 50-second 50, I put them on the 50-50 swim workout, which is 50 meters free, 50 meters CSS, do that 10 times. And I've seen people go from, you know, a 10:30 to an 8-minute swim, you know, in a month. Even had one guy do it in 3 weeks, which was remarkable. But he learned the stroke. He was able to maintain that technique throughout the 500. And then he just got in shape for the 500 and crushed it. And one thing I will promise you, you do 10 50-50s, which comes out to 1,000, plus a 500 warm-up or cool-down, that's 1,500. That will get you in shape for any 500-yard swim. So that's what you got to do. If you haven't seen the 50-50, that's something you can Google. 50-50 swim workout, Stu Smith. And there's a couple different articles out there. One's called Dude, You're Not in Swimming Shape, which is just kind of a funny answer, but it gives the 50-50. But this one's right here. This article's called The 50-50 Workout, Crush Your Swim Test in Less Than a Month. And you know what, folks? That's free. It is free. That's it. Just got to follow a plan on an article. How cool is that? You should be punching that like button right now, because I give you guys a lot of free stuff. Yeah, I sell books, but, you know, you don't have to buy them. I appreciate it when you do, because you're going to have a program that's going to guide you to where you want to be. And you can always ask me questions if you don't understand it. How cool is that? All right, so. Ian says, hey, Stu, I read the pararescue training has the highest attrition rate in all spec ops. Do you know why this is? Yeah, it's because people aren't prepared to go do it. We've had a couple guys go to the pararescue training program and do really well because they were prepared. So it's the biggest reason why is their lack of preparation in the water and their For the most part, that tends to get most people, is their inability to be relaxed when they're treading or doing drown proofing, or for the rescue guys, it's buddy breathing with a snorkel. Really tough to do because you got to tread, you got to keep your head underwater, and the only way you can inhale is when your buddy is not inhaling, and you got to bring it back and forth like that. That's a gut check. You know, you can't go into that without having practiced it. And most people don't practice that on their own prior to doing it. The way we do it is when we have some Air Force guys training, I'll get them buddy breathing back and forth, and then I'll put them in a swim lane, and then I'll crowd that swim lane with 10 swimmers. And every time a swimmer has to go by them, they'll go over them, right? So they're actually dunking these guys underwater, just like an instructor would do. And it's just constant. It's like you come up for a breath, you get dunked. You know, you go back down, you come up for a breath, you get dunked again. And it's just back and forth, especially when you load that lane up. You might get 15 seconds rest sometimes, but that's about it. But that's how we do it. It's a lot of fun. Or I'll go do it and be the instructor and, you know, take them down to the bottom, make them come back up, blow their, you know, snorkel, pass it back and forth. But it is pure teamwork, man. That will help you be a better team player, I promise you. Great program. I love PJs. Let's see. What's a good time for the 1,000 with fins prior to buds? You know, I try to keep it at a yard per second. I keep at a yard per second with fins and at a yard per second without fins. You're not necessarily going to be much faster with those big scuba fins. You will be more powerful with them, and that's really what they're for. Those big rocket fins you're going to swim with, they're built for power to get through the current and tides, you know, that you're going to be facing in open water. You put on a flimsy pair of fins, you'll see you don't go anywhere, and you got to kick like crazy just to get, you know, try to get through some of that stuff. So they're built for power, not necessarily for pure speed. So remember that. And a yard per second is really good. So 1,000 yards in 1,000 seconds equals a 1640. So if you can go somewhere between 1640 and 730 or 1730, that's really good. I think the time used to be like 21 minutes you had to do it, but I try to get everybody down to 17 minutes or faster. Once again, just trying to be in front of the class versus meeting the minimum standards. So when you see that minimum standard there, you want to try to get away from that as much as you can. Minutes should be separating you from those minimum standards. You have 85 minutes to swim 2 miles in the open water in first phase. 75 is better, right? If you have sub 70s, even better. There are going to be guys in the 60s doing it, but they're crushing it. You know, if you have 32 minutes to pass the 4 mile timed run in boots and sand at Buds, you know, be closer to 28 minutes. Those are my recommendations. I drive a school bus every afternoon, drive my middle school kids by the recruiters, who are usually PTN recruits, plant the seed. I do push-ups all the time for my students. Oh, that's cool, man. That's good. I quit during SOAS and I regret it. Is there a way I can still become a SEAL? Could I go back to SOAS? You can apply again. You can apply again, see if you get in. You know, I've seen it happen. But you can definitely enlist and go to Buds, you know, but make sure you're really addressing why you chose not to continue. Were you hurt? Were you something weak? Just a bad day? Were you sick? You know, all of those things can come into play with making that decision. Make sure that is getting addressed first before you really try to go through the process again. But I've seen a lot of guys go through SOAS, not make it through SOAS, and enlist. And they're SEALs now. And we also have a couple of guys that were OCS candidates that did not get it their first time at SOAS and made it a second time. Now, you can't do that if you're Academy or your ROTC, but you can you can do it if you're OCS. For 50-meter pool, how many seconds per meter to be equivalent to 100 yards in 100 seconds? You know, that's a good question. You can do that math. It's not complicated. But I will tell you this. There are 54 yards in 50 meters. So let that figure it all out for you. All right. So 54 yards in 50 meters. So if you do a yard per second and you hit a 50 meter in 54 seconds, that's okay, because that's still a yard per second. 50 meters is going to be a little further than 50 yards. So it's all right to not be at a meter per second, which is a little bit faster. It's not impossible, but it's a little bit faster. It's probably going to be a more equivalent to, instead of an 820, probably like a 750 pace, which is fast, not breaking any records, but it's still fast. So yeah, that's the math. So it's 108 yards in 100 meters. There you go. My current 100 meters is 210. So that is 130 seconds. So you're still a little bit slower than a yard per second. Right? Because if you wanted to be at a yard per second, you would be at 108 seconds, which would put you at a minute 48. Right? Yes, minute 48. So you are like 20 seconds off that. 10 seconds slower. So yeah, it's either a conditioning issue and you're just running out of steam, or it's a technique issue and you're not fast enough to be at a yard per second yet. That's okay. Send a video in and I'll critique it and I'll show you what you're doing wrong. In fact, that's what tomorrow's show is all about. You guys send me some videos and I will critique them. You know, I get more videos than I can critique in the show, so I still critique them. I just send you an email saying, 1, 2, 3, 4, this is what you're doing wrong. This is how you fix it. But if I see one that's pretty common and it's a pretty common mistake, I tend to show those a little bit more, or I'll show perfect ones. You know, someone doing it perfectly, and I was like, "There, I literally have nothing to say. This is perfect. Watch this. This is the way you want to do it." So those are very useful, but also very common mistakes are very useful. And I make a whole TikTok channel, nothing but CSS critiques. In fact, you can find it at this URL, TikTok.com/StuSmith50. Also, all of those videos and many more are on my Instagram Reels, which is the same StuSmith50 tag on Instagram. You can go there. But you know, if you like old school videos, you can look on this YouTube channel and you'll find many old school videos of me coaching with a much older camera. And it looks like it, but they're very effective tools. To be using, it was probably 10, 12 years ago. So technology has changed a little bit. Cameras are better today, but, you know, swim has not changed. And I have not really changed the way I coach. So there's decades worth of videos that you can find on YouTube, Instagram, and TikTok. And I'm starting to put some of the newer ones on my YouTube Live. Is it YouTube Live? No. YouTube Shorts. Yeah, the YouTube Shorts are now getting some newer videos on there too. So you guys can check those out. So I appreciate your time and listening today. I thought it was a good topic. You guys had some great questions. Let's spread the word on getting young people moving, because they need it. We all need it as a country as well. If I missed your question, you can just send me an email, stu@stusmith.com. I want you guys to check out stusmithfitness.com. That is my up-to-date website that's linked into my social media and all of that. And if you use Live15, sticking around this long, you can save 15% on those books and ebooks that you see over there. Things like this. Crush that PST. You want to crush the PST? This is it right here. No matter what you want to do, SEAL, SWIC, EOD, diver, rescue swimmer, and even SARC. A whole bunch of those. I have an answer for just about every fitness test out there and follow-on training. All right, folks. I appreciate your time. It's been an hour. Let's go on to do other things today. Go crush it. We'll see you later.